Even before we got to Alabama, we'd been told to expect a bossy grandmother who is totally awesome. Okay, let me back up. We've been celebrating members of the civil rights generation, folks like 92-year-old Fred Gray, who was Rosa Parks' lawyer, even my own mom and uncle, who grew up in segregated North Carolina. So Deborah Douglas, author of A Civil Rights Guidebook, told us this bossy grandmother was someone we just had to meet.
Should I call you Miss Bland?
Most people call me Miss Bland.
Miss
Bland. They're younger than me.
Well, I'm going to call you Miss Bland.
Joanne Bland has been guiding visitors through Selma for 33 years. On this day, she's wearing a T-shirt that says kindness.
I'm going to take you on a regular tour.
Okay.
Okay. We ride, I talk. Mm-hmm. You listen.
Yes.
Bland was born in Selma in 1953, and for just about every block, she has a story, which she'll deliver to you straight and uncut.
This is our movie theater. See that little window and the door with the four sections?
Mm-hmm.
That was the colored entrance. That's what they called us. You know, we paid our money at the window, and then we went upstairs in the balcony where we threw things down on people's heads.
Bland's tour is part walking, part driving, and she drives slow as she wants to, blinkers on, don't worry about the mother cars, all while she opens your eyes to American history.
We are now turning on the Water Avenue, one of the first streets in Selma when Selma became a city. At one period in our history, this was as far inland as you could come from the Gulf of Mexico into the state of Alabama, so it made Selma a major trade mecca. You see this red building on the right?
Yeah.
This was a slave holding pen. The slaves were brought up from the river and housed on the second floor.
Journeys for the Soul. That's what Joanne Bland calls her tours. She runs her business with her granddaughter, Jasmine. The emphasis is on the fight for voting rights that culminated here in 1965. It made Selma front page famous and forced an extraordinary special address to Congress from President Lyndon Johnson.
At times, history and fate meet at a single time, in a single place, to shape a turning point in man's unending search for freedom.
In that speech, LBJ urged Congress to pass the Voting Rights Act. It was March 15, 1965, just 1 week after voting rights activists had gathered in Selma to march to the Alabama State Capitol. Out of Selma's 15,000 or so black residents, just over 300 had registered to vote. Before they'd even left Selma, the activists led by Hosea Williams of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference and John Lewis of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, or SNCC, were confronted on the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
To be detrimental to your safety to continue this march, and I'm saying that this is an unlawful assembly, you have to disperse.
State troopers and local police were armed with tear gas, nightsticks, some of them on horseback. With her older sister, Linda, Joanne Bland was on that bridge that day. She was just 11 years old on what would become known as Bloody Sunday. She puts the bridge in our rear view at the start of the tour, driving us to an area of small brick apartment buildings while we annoy her with questions. So many questions.
Yeah. Now listen, let me tell y'all this, okay? Mm-hmm. And don't ask me a question.
I won't.
The area you're in is George Washington Carver Homes, okay? This is where I grew up at. But this area became the center of the voting rights struggle.
Joanne Bland was raised in this public housing by her dad and grandma. It was a haven for local and out-of-town activists.
My grandmother and most of the mothers in the community would say, when it would start to get dark in the evening, to go find a white person, because we would always find them sitting on those steps, the steps of Brown Chapel, with a backpack on their back leaning against the wall, and perfectly happy to sleep there because they couldn't stay at hotels. It was dangerous for them because they were outside of agitators.
We get out of the car at Brown Chapel AME Church, one of the most famous sites in civil rights history.
Now, did you listen to Martin Luther King here?
Of course.
Of course.
Now, the one thing I remember, he was always eager to talk to us, young people. And when the elders would try to keep us away, he'd say, no, let them come, let them come. And he would ask you about your day, and you wanted to tell him every detail. And at 9 o'clock, I went to the restroom, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Just to stay in his presence.
Uh-huh.
And he always had a peppermint, a Starlight peppermint. And he would always give you that peppermint. And to this day, I love peppermints.
Yeah.
At this point, we spy a rival tour group across the street.
Y'all want to see who the competition is?
Bland's strong view is that tours should be led by the people who live this history, foot soldiers.
And I'm just being nosy because I am the tour guide for Sarah. But next time you bring a group, they might want to talk to someone who was there.
So Linda,
it's my sister,
is going to speak to us here in a little bit.
Okay, okay.
Yeah. You're good. You're in good hands. Yeah.
With that cleared up, Bland marches us to the edge of a small, kind of rundown playground surrounded by a chain link fence and old chip pavement.
I want you to stand on this cement. I need you to find a rock. Hurry up, little girl. Then we got all day. It's cold out here. Why don't you look over here? You see that rock?
I see this rock.
You know who stood on that rock?
Who?
57 years ago.
Who?
Child John Lewis stood on that rock.
Oh, wow.
You see, you're standing on the last piece of the original cement where we gathered on what is now known as Bloody Sunday. I followed John Lewis and Jose Williams up to that bridge to be beaten by law enforcement officers.
Mm.
You're standing on sacred ground. This is the cement I've been trying to save.
Saving this cement is a calling for Bland. She went to college out of state, served in the Army, but decided to come back. Since then, she's dedicated herself to her hometown. She wants to build a park here to honor the city's contribution to America and have the cement be a kind of monument where future generations can walk in the footsteps of history makers. She sees it as a way to lift up this majority Black community that struggles with poverty.
This is urgent that we start to capture our own histories, that I'm one of the youngest people who participated, one of, not the youngest. But we're leaving here every day. And when we leave, those stories are gone. Who would tell the story?
With that, we get back in the car and make our way along what's now Martin Luther King Street.
This is First Baptist. First Baptist was SNCC headquarters. This is where they tried to teach me the principles of nonviolence. I flunked.
We're probably about a mile from where the marchers were attacked on Bloody Sunday.
This is also where I came back to. My sister and I, Linda, ran back here. We ran past our house thinking we didn't have time to unlock the door because those same men were chasing the marchers back. And we were terrified. And we kept running and we ran up those steps. And went inside the church thinking we were safe. We were not. They came into the church and started beating people all over again.
My goodness.
Yeah. I saw them pick up a young man about 16 years old and just hoist him above their heads and throw him into the baptismal pool. What happened at that bridge didn't stop at that bridge. It happened out here all night long.
She never stops teaching. Here is the dividing line between Black and white Selma. Here is the house where Dr. King stayed. She stops the van in front of a large house that looks like a plantation.
I've come a long, long way with this civil rights history because it's been like therapy. Talking about it, it was like a cleansing.
Yeah.
But I'm not nearly in that same place with this slavery history.
Yeah.
Our history had to be the worst of all mankind.
We don't get out of the car here. Bland has only been inside the house, now a museum, once.
When I opened that door, I was overwhelmed with the beauty of this house. Mm-hmm. It has been completely restored to the way it was in the 1800s. It has a stairway that drew me to it like a magnet. And I stood there marveling over this wonderful craftsmanship and wondering, did some of my ancestors do this incredible work?
Bland said the curator at the time talked about the history of the house, but not about its connection to slavery. When asked why not, the curator told her,
"We wouldn't want to offend anyone, would we?" I told her she offended me when she brought me from Africa. Don't you think I would have been proud to tell the child that I raised that even though their ancestors were stolen from their homeland, they didn't come here stupid. They came here with the skills in their hands not only to carve those perfect columns, they knew the recipe to make those bricks. They not only had the skills in their hand to build this magnificent mansion, but America.
Our next stop shows just how tied up that Civil War history remains with the progress of the Civil Rights era.
This cemetery, I have a love-hate relationship with it. The trees are magnificent.
They are beautiful.
I mean, huge, huge magnolias and oaks. Oh, my goodness, it's just amazing. And then all this evil is inside of it.
Bland drives through the dirt roads of Live Oak Cemetery. It predates the Civil War and includes a monument to Nathan Bedford Forrest, a Confederate general and KKK Grand Wizard. You would think the monument is old, like the cemetery, but it actually was put up after Selma elected its first black mayor in 2000.
When I look at it, it says to me, "You may have a Negro mayor, but I'm still here." We ought to find a way to change hearts. And the people who think like that are still here.
Yeah.
And they're still fighting this war.
Because there are Confederate flags up.
Everywhere.
We're looking at Confederate flags.
But you can walk all day long and you may find one American flag. I use this as a teaching tool to let young people know it wasn't that long ago that this is still here.
What do you say to those people who will say they're concerned about teaching this sort of history to young white children because they worry that they will feel bad about themselves?
Well, one, you can't let a child leave thinking you're blaming them. Mm-hmm. Now, you're not even blaming their parents. Hopefully, I'm inspiring that white child with the stories of the past to join with the children of color to make sure this never, ever happens to another people.
Is this where you end the tour?
Yeah, kind of, sort of. There are a couple more things I want to show you.
Bland drives us back toward downtown, stopping just short of the bridge where her life and America really changed back in 1965. It's still named for another Confederate general and KKK leader, and Bland wouldn't change that.
When you change names, you change history. I walked across the Edmund Pettus Bridge. All those bad things he did.
Mm-hmm.
Every time you walk across that bridge, I bet he's rolling in his grave. That's what Grandma would say. I think what we did was change the whole meaning of this bridge.
On March 25th, 1965, on their third try, marchers joined by Martin Luther King Jr. arrived in Montgomery, Alabama. Joanne Bland was among them. The Voting Rights Act passed that August.
Selma gave so much. This history is so rich that it's sort of like Mecca, coming to Mecca. And I had so many people to tell me they didn't realize the bridge was that small. That's because the history is so huge. So huge.
That was Joanne Bland, just one member of the Civil Rights Generation. Her tours of Selma are called Journeys for the Soul. This piece was produced by Samantha Balaban and edited by Shannon Rhodes.